The next section will be the Veterans News. And today we have an interview with Kathy Marshman, who is the Vice President of Veterans of Modern Warfare. And she talked to me about women veterans' health issues, among other things. And so we're going to get into the Veterans News now. Welcome to another edition of Veterans News. I'm Jerry Swenson, and today we'll be talking with Kathy Marshman. Kathy is currently a senior aide to a Wisconsin state legislator and logistics officer in the Wisconsin National Guard, and she's serving as the Vice President for Veterans of Modern Warfare. And Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Kathy, for the past 5 years, you've been helping to develop the Community-Based Warrior Transition Program. Could you tell us a bit about this program and what you do and what its objectives are?
Well, I'd be happy to. The Community-Based Warrior Transition Units are similar to the Warrior Transition Units that the Army established at the at a lot of the Army hospitals and their installations over the course of the last couple of years. However, the community-based model actually preceded the current model. When I took command in 2004 of one of the first units, it was called a community-based healthcare organization. Mm-hmm. And the Army had established those to support wounded, injured, and ill National Guard and Reserve soldiers.
I see. They were coming back to their communities. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. So prior to those community-based units being established, Reserve and National Guard soldiers, say from my hometown of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, the soldier might be stuck out at Fort Lewis, Washington, mm-hmm. if that's where his unit had mobilized through.
I see.
So he's receiving his medical care at Fort Lewis, Washington, and his family, his spouse, his children, his friends, the rest of his family, his whole support network is back here in Wisconsin.
It just makes the whole transition that much more impossible, doesn't it?
It was terrible. I mean, the stories are really tragic.
Yeah.
And so the Army started the community-based program as a model so that it would enable that soldier to come back, live at his home, receive his medical care in the community through whatever providers were available, be it military medical providers, the VA system, TRICARE providers, which are civilian providers mm-hmm. In the community. And it was a huge success that first year of 2004. And in 2005, the Army expanded the program and so that it would cover the entire continental United States in addition to Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And it has been it was so well received by the Reserve and National Guard soldiers that and their families that participated in that program that now active duty soldiers actually called for a program like that. They said, hey, you know, this is really a way to make sure that the family and an individual support network is involved in the treatment and rehabilitation of these soldiers. And, of course, it's all dependent on the type of care that the individual soldier needed, too. Unfortunately, there are some some injuries that are just too complicated, too traumatic for the soldier to be able to live at home and receive care locally. And I think the military trauma centers were really the best place for some soldiers. So it doesn't work for everybody.
But the philosophy is that the receiving of medical care shouldn't isolate the returning veteran.
Precisely.
It should endeavor to continue to integrate him into the community.
And I know some of the, you know, the communities then with these community-based warrior transition units, communities have really had an opportunity to get involved to further provide support to these soldiers.
And I think that's really healthy all the way around. You know, I think it's healthy for the returning veteran to be received by the community. I think it's healthy for the community to acknowledge and embrace the returning veteran, too.
Absolutely, because, you know, something that I learned when I worked at that unit was that there are a lot of people and organizations in the community that want to help, and they want to do something, and they want to make a difference in these soldiers' lives. And a lot of times they don't know how.
Right.
We were able to reach out and coordinate, and it was just a wonderful experience. And it also taught me that there are a lot of needs that it really does take quite a community effort to help a lot of these soldiers and their families. And, you know, one thing that I can't state enough is just the incredible spirit that I saw in these soldiers as they came through our unit and as I met these wonderful individuals. I mean, it was just incredible that they had a spirit of just kind of a will not quit spirit. And so many of them said, hey, you know, I might be broken up a little bit, but you know what? There are folks that have it a lot worse, and I just want to get better, and I want to, you know, get back with my buddies because they felt that's where they belong. And so many stories like that is just incredible. So
excellent.
So that's in a nutshell.
Well, I'm really, really happy to see that expanding on a community level. I think that that's very healthy all the way around. I think that it has been a disservice to the military to have not very intense coverage of the actions in part to allay criticism of those actions, but it also, you know, it doesn't allow recognition and embracing of the returning veterans by the community when it's low keyed like that, and so I think that this is a really a good move. It's a move in the right direction, I think.
And Jerry, one other plug I think that I have to make, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, was that under the community based warrior transition unit, the comprehensive model that we established for delivering care to the soldiers really prevented soldiers from falling through the cracks. You hear about that time and again where, you know, if a soldier's in the hospital and, you know, they fell through the cracks, or their family somehow fell through the cracks, or the soldier's lost in the VA or whatever. And at the community-based warrior transition units, because we had our command and control element together with our medical element, our medical case managers, our clinical psychologist, plus we had our chaplain support, all for the most part co-located together, that we didn't have lapses in the sharing of information.
This is true. I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Peace Radio. This is the Veterans News, and we're listening to Kathy Marshman talking about the Warrior Transition Program that's community-based, and later on in the interview, she'll be talking about women veterans' health issues. Kathy Marshman.
So that if the Warrior's platoon sergeant said, you know, hey, I talked to him this morning and he didn't seem, you know, he didn't seem his usual self. He's different.
Right, right.
He could just walk across the room and go talk to that soldier's nurse case manager, and they could have a chat about, you know, what the platoon sergeant was seeing from the kind of the soldier's side versus what the nurse case manager was seeing from the medical side, and they were able to to communicate and work together as a team. And that's really the hallmark success of the community-based warrior transition unit.
And so, I'm sure that's felt by the veteran, too, that he's being treated as an individual rather than a number on a chart.
That we heard that time and time again.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was so important.
It not only makes the medical treatment more efficient and integrated, but it really boosts the morale of the returning veteran, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, let's move on. The Army and the armed forces are changing, have been changing over the past decade, and women are the fastest growing demographic in the modern military, and so they're increasingly swelling the ranks of the veterans' numbers. And so you have VMW has some specific recommendations for women's health care. Could you talk to us about those?
Veterans of Modern Warfare, we feel strongly about all veterans receiving the care, the treatment, the benefits that they deserve. And, you know, women veterans are the fastest growing segment of the veteran population. And it's estimated that in the next 2 to 4 years, that the number of women in the VA will double. And so really the VA is behind the power curve at this point in trying to change their system, change their bureaucracy.
Right, because typically they've been just geared to males mainly, huh?
Right, because they have been serving, you know, primarily males that the VA is really not prepared to deal with the issues that women veterans bring, which include PTSD, which include maternity issues, gynecological issues, child care issues, just and military sexual abuse. And it's, you know, unfortunately, sexual assault of females in the military does happen. And
yes.
I think it's one of those items that is not often talked about. And, you know, it's the military is women. We're growing in numbers in the military, but we're still a minority.
And there's still kind of a macho culture within the military culture,
right,
too.
Right, right. And the rules and the procedures that are followed when someone reports a sexual assault really have, at least in the past, have tended to really work against the victim. And so I think that the numbers that they have and the data that they have right now related to sexual assaults in the military, I would, speaking for myself, I would question those, and I would guess that is really underreported.
Right. Well, typically rape is underreported anyway in general, but within a military hierarchy, I could see that there would be a lot of pressure to underreport that.
So the GAO actually came out with a report just recently, and they testified before the Senate committee that, you know, they went in, they looked at the VA, and they found that the facilities that they looked at really were not meeting the needs of women when it came to, you know, even when it came to general privacy. And I was shocked to read some of the findings, and I thought, well, gee whiz, I thought this was just general medical practice. And one of the things that jumped out at me was that at one of the facilities. They had an exam room that opened, to, a female exam room that opened to a waiting room. Holy cow, are we living in the, you know, back in the Middle Ages or something? This is, I mean, I was flabbergasted that any medical facility in this day and age would do that. You know,
probably people didn't mind waiting so much, though.
You know, but I thought, I was stunned, and it's clear the VA is a gigantic bureaucracy, and bureaucracies don't change course.
I mean,
it's an enormous undertaking, but these are simple things that could be done, and we would, VMW really does want to see the VA improve overall. We want to see the VA improve for their services to women, to provide that the gender-specific health care
to
women.
I've been reading your white paper, and it's very well thought out. I think it's very inclusive, and not a lot of detail, but a lot of specifics, specific things that you want to address and the ways to address them. What is your strategy about getting the VA more in tune with serving the increasing numbers of female veterans that are coming at them?
I think, you know, I'm looking right now, at least for me, to get out and network and meet a lot of the other leaders when it comes to veterans issues. And there are a number of organizations out there that are advocating for women veterans. And I know that you've spoken already with our executive director, Don Overton, and we also have a legislative committee, and I think that Don or our legislative chair would be able to speak more to that strategy as far as how we're going to take on Washington. And I think that we're looking to boost our numbers. As you mentioned in the intro, we're a new organization. We're just a couple years old. And so we're still growing. And so we really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you so that others can hear about BMW and hopefully get involved.
Right, because you've got to you've got to focus your resources on Washington, because that's where the policy changes are made. But you need that community support to back up those suggested changes.
We're very encouraged by what we've seen in Congress. The Senate held a hearing last week. The House has been having hearings. There are advocates in Washington, in Congress. The House approved H.R. 1211 just recently, and that's the Women's Veteran Health Care Improvement Act. VMW is very supportive of that piece of legislation. I think it could go further, but it's a good step forward. That it's going to require the VA to study the barriers in service for women veterans and to provide better staff training. One thing, as I listened to the Senate committee hearing, it's apparent that there is really a knowledge gap, even with providers and with staff at the VA, that a lot of these women veterans testified that they were told, hey, you can't have PTSD because women aren't in combat. Well, it's true. A female cannot enlist to serve in the infantry. That's a true statement.
It doesn't mean she hasn't been traumatized.
Well, women are in combat, and they're out there, and they are shoulder to shoulder with their male counterparts, and they are in combat, and they are suffering that same trauma.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. Combat is not really the issue. I mean, you could be in transport and have your vehicle blown up and your buddies killed and dismembered, and that could be very traumatizing, and it doesn't have to be a battlefield injury necessarily.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, as it's described, you think of some of these staff are still thinking, well, gee whiz, women in the military, they must be sitting in a, you know, secretaries in an office.
Right.
So a lot of what needs to happen is just education of providers, of staff. And that was acknowledged by the VA that testified at the hearing. And so that's, we're looking for that improvement.
Right. So the VA understands that it is becoming under criticism and needs to take a serious look at how it's dealing with it.
Yeah, I think that's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to actually see changes occur, that, I mean, it's one thing to hear VA officials talk at a committee hearing and say, yeah, you know, we understand there's a need for change and we need to make improvements and we're going to be looking at this. Well, mm-hmm. No, let's fix it. We want to see it fixed. And so BMW wants to help be an engine of change and to help the VA get their stuff straight. You know, women are younger veterans as well when it comes to the VA. And so that adds another different aspect that the VA has to adjust to. The average, when women enter the VA, the average age at which women enter the VA is 48.
Uh-huh.
Compared to the age of 61 for males.
I see, yeah.
So right there's a difference. I mean, women are entering the VA, they're still childbearing years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's women in the VA seeking services that brings such a different dynamic and so many different needs that the VA needs to turn things around quickly, I think at a quicker pace than they're used to, you know, changing at.
Right.
So we just want to help give them a nudge.
Okay. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and telling us about Veterans of Modern Warfare and the policy changes that they're trying to initiate for care of women veterans that are returning from the service. And as I look through this white paper, I see a lot of interesting things that we could talk about with you and other officers of the Veterans of Modern Warfare, very specific clauses that you have in your white paper with regard to, for instance, veterans' civil rights and examination of Gulf War illness and other toxic exposures. So I look forward to visiting with you and maybe Don and some of the other officers at a later date and talking about some of these other specific recommendations that you're trying to see accomplished in the Veterans Administration.
Thanks, Jerry. It's been a pleasure to be with you, and I do hope I get the opportunity to speak with you again.
Okay, well, we'll schedule it. Thanks so
All
much,
right.
Kathy. And that was Kathy Marshman reporting for Veterans News about health issues, about the transition, Warrior Transition community-based program, and about women's health issues in the Veterans Administration. You're listening to KRFP Moscow.